Richard Lambert. I'm an Epsom and Yule Football Club supporter and have been since the age of 14, which is 44 years ago.
Excellent stuff. Now, you've supported Epsom and Yule for almost 44 years, as you've just mentioned. What first drew you to the club?
I used to go to school local. I went to Epsom High School, or Longmead School, as some people will remember it as. I think it's now known as Blenheim School. I used to get the train from Stoneleigh, where I lived, and we would get the train to Yule West Station. And as we went past, you could see this football ground, and it was like, oh, this is interesting. What's all this about? I'd never been to a game of football at this point. Started to read the local papers and the reports about the games, and really was taken in by that and thought, well, if we get an opportunity to have a big game, I'm going to go along. And that happened in October 81. We had an FA Cup tie against Hastings United. And 17th of October 1981. I may refer to dates from time to time. That's what I do. Sorry, I'm a data person.
And what does the club mean to you personally and within the local community, would you say?
Personally, this club has been my life. I've, as I say, been a supporter since I was 14. I hardly miss a game, home or away, in that time. So whilst the number of games I've missed is over 100, it works out at literally about 2.5 games a season. It's not very much over nearly 50 years. I've dedicated an enormous amount of my time to the club. We lost our home ground in 1993, which used to be in Yule Village. Since then, it's been a matter of nomadic existence at Banstead, Merstham, Chipstead, Leatherhead, round the corner at Corinthian Casuals, and now back down at Cobham. So it's something that I've taken personally to try and raise the profile of the club, and I've done this in a number of ways, be it as a committee member, which I was for the best part of 20 years, a fundraiser, sponsor walks here, there and everywhere, raising money for the club, raising the profile, and things like that. I wrote a history book for the football club in 2007, which is very rare these days. You can't find them. They were a limited edition, but they did sell out. So that was nice. And there are a lot of people out there in the community who really, really are interested in Epsom and Yule Football Club. And the fact that we've not had a ground for a long time is a problem.
And can you share some of your favourite memories following Epsom and Yule over the decades?
One of my earliest memories certainly would be my first game. I can remember walking in, as many supporters do at some point, or many football fans who remember their first game, and walking in and looking around and just taking the whole thing in. And although we lost that day, I quite enjoyed it. And so the following week I was going back again, and I went back the following Saturday. We won 6-0. And I was hooked. And we won quite a lot that year. We had a real roller coaster of a season, 81-82. We had real success in a number of cup competitions. I think we played 21 cup ties that year. Knocked out, I think, 6 or 7 clubs from higher levels, and had some really, really big games. And then just at the height of that, our manager and most of the players all walked out in the February. And so it was a real roller coaster of a season. But yes, I was hooked then. And I decided I was going to go to every game I could for the following season. So from 1982, I went 13 and a half years without missing a game, home or away. Memorable games during that time. I can remember us winning a League Cup in 2013, 3-0 against South Park. That was something that I'd not seen us do, because we hadn't won a cup since 1981. So it was a 42-year wait for that. A 32-year wait. Sorry for that to come about. I can remember a game not so long ago, 2016, where we played at Bedfont and Feltham. Over that way, and we were 2-0 down at half time and won 9-2. It was a bizarre game. Famous cup ties. I can remember us losing 5-4 to Bognor Regis in a cup tie. These games might not sound that important, but Bognor Regis went on to have a very, very successful run in the FA Cup, got to the second round, knocked Swansea City out, things like that. And you sit there and you think, oh, these, you know, little moments that might have gone our way instead. Memories that sort of come and go. Some come back to me, or people will be talking about games and it'll be, oh yes, I remember this one or that one.
Absolutely. Now, there have been some tensions recently, haven't there? When did tensions first start to develop between you and the club's committee?
Okay, well, I've been, as I say, a member of that club committee until 2021. And I was media officer. I made it my job, as I have done in most of the time at the club, to raise the profile of the club, to let supporters know what's going on. I used to produce the match programme, and the match programme used to win many awards. We won 14 awards in 12 years. And the whole premise is that while we're away from the ground and we have no home base, it's about letting people know what's going on. And I feel that that's my responsibility as a club officer at the time. In August 2020, however, we had a few changes, and we had a guy step up from membership secretary to become chairman. Two or three other people came in, and at the time it looked like it was a breath of fresh air and the club maybe needed this. But what has become apparent in that year between 2020 and 21 is that the club became very secretive. The chairman pronounced on the day he was going to be elected that he would be open, honest and transparent. And we've had anything but in that time. And it got to the point where it was quite clear that decisions were being made by just two or three people on the committee. I wasn't being listened to. I was media officer and ran the website and the social media pages. Yet the football club were behind my back creating another website. And I know this because when I resigned the following summer, it suddenly appeared, but they'd left on a welcome message that they'd put on in the January. So I know that this was what they were up to. And this is really typical of the way the club operate. Everything is underhand and devious and behind people's backs. They don't like people to find out what goes on. And they are extremely, almost paranoid about the whole situation. Now me, I am a fan of openness and honesty and transparency. And realistically, I will let people know. I'll let our supporters know what's happening, whether it's good or bad. I won't sugarcoat it. I might match reports with the club and have done for nearly 20 years now. If we're bad, I'll say so. If we're good, I'll say so. So people know it's an honest report. They won't read a rose-tinted view. But of course, I also provide a lot more information than the club do. And they don't like that. I don't toe the party line. And they have had issues with me since then. And I think that it's very difficult to pinpoint exactly when it happened. But certainly in the August or July of 2022, I was banned on the premise of stealing club property, which was a complete fabrication. I had to get the Football Supporters Association in to fight my case, after which the football club had to issue a grovelling public apology. And you'd have thought they'd have learned the lesson from that. But no, they clearly took that insult personally. And it's been like a personal vendetta for the last few years. I get a very, very toxic atmosphere when I'm at the football club. When I'm with my boy, who's 17 now, he gets very little by way of any sort of warmth at all. A number of supporters who have been at the club for many, many years who share similar views to mine are also shunned. I stepped off the committee in July 2021. Within a year, two others had done the same for exactly the same reasons. They felt that all the decisions were being made by two or three people. And this really then came to a head earlier on this year in January. I was highlighting the fact that the football club were breaking their own club rules. And essentially, they had hired... most clubs have an annual general meeting, and most clubs hold it in June, July, August. Maybe August if it's really late. And the football club didn't do this. They didn't bother. And eventually, they held it in January, which is outside the span that their club rules state it should be. They had had a vacant position of membership secretary there. It had been vacant for a year and a half. Our club hadn't been advertising for members. And they had the position vacant. And I thought, well, I'll stand for the position. Membership secretary is a job that has been massively ignored in recent years. Our football club is a members club, but there's been no attempts to create any growth in terms of that area. And this is largely so the committee and some of their family who are members can retain a majority and make all the decisions. So as a result of which, I made a little protest on my site, and I changed the name of my club Twitter site to from Epsom and Ewell Supporters FC to Epsom and Ewell FC for 6 days, and then I changed it back. But by that time, I had been given a substantial amount of grief by the vice chairman at a football game in the January. Following which he the sort of the culmination of that conversation resulted in him threatening to beat me up and take me out into the car park and beat me up. The vice chairman's name is Barry Gartell, and some people around may already know that sort of thing is something that well, I won't say he has form for, because everything is kept very secretive and very quiet, but certainly an awful lot of people empathised with my position when I put the post out. However, the football club realised clearly that this fellow had gone too far. And so within a day, they'd issued a public statement accusing me of starting all of this, despite the fact that I was standing watching the game behind the goal where I do with my boy. And this fellow had come over to us and started getting in my ear about it all. And so basically it was a complete fabrication. There were only three people party to this conversation, so the football club only had this guy's word to say for it. He was obviously covering his tracks, and the club decided to do the same. They launched what I call Operation Distraction, and that is basically something that the football club do: discredit the witnesses, throw mud, try to just distract anyone from what actually happened so people will forget what actually happened. And that's exactly what happened. I received a letter giving me an indefinite ban from the football club for a breach of this Twitter name for 6 days, based on an agreement that I had drawn up myself, in fact, with the football club a few years ago following the previous ban. And it's ironic because, apart from the fact that nobody actually agreed to it, even though they, in the banning letter, they said it was all agreed to, no one signed it or anything, the football club were also given lots of obligations as a result of that agreement, and they've broken every single one of them. Yet I broke one temporarily, and they've decided it's worthy of a lifetime ban. We know this is not the real reason, and this is the reason why people who may well have seen some of the interviews, this is why people are wondering why the football club aren't saying anything. Why are they not commenting? It's because they can't justify it. The reason they've got is because their vice chairman threatened me and they're trying to cover the tracks.
Now, before this lifetime ban, had you received any warnings or suspensions beforehand, or was it just straight to the lifetime ban?
Well, I had a ban 3 years previously, which the football club, as I say, had to apologise for. They made up the story about me getting stealing club property, which is complete rubbish. I mean, I've been at the club for 40 years. I've raised nearly £20,000 for the club. Why I would ever steal any property is just farcical. And I think that what happened from there is that they realised that they made a mistake and they wanted to wait for another opportunity. That opportunity only presented itself as a result of the vice chairman's threat. So, yeah.
And how did you find out that you were banned, and what was your initial reaction?
Well, the reason I found out I was banned, and I should also say that I was given an indefinite ban. The football club have apparently said now it's a lifetime ban, but they've never bothered to tell me, nor did they bother to respond to my appeals, even though their chairman actually suggested that I should write in an appeal, because that's the way our chairman works. But I actually received notification of this ban less than 24 hours of actually having the threats thrown at me at the football match. So I received this on the Sunday, the 19th of January, and it was delivered anonymously by a taxi. A letter dropped through my letterbox, and when I said to the taxi driver, "Who sent this?" the taxi driver referred to the name of the chairman's company. So I don't know whether he's claiming that on expenses for his company, but it certainly isn't company business. And it made it quite clear to me, obviously, where it had come from. It referred to this breach of an agreement, which, as I say, they have breached in six areas themselves, and it's farcical. It really is. They're just trying to cover their tracks. They know they haven't got anything that is anywhere near remotely equivalent of something that would cause a ban. I've never been violent. I've never been drunk and disorderly at a game. I don't go around breaking the law. I don't cause that sort of problem. You know, I'm critical of my club, as a supporter has the right to be. And what they really do not like is the fact that my website and my ex-site have a large number of followers and views, and they don't like the fact that I have a platform. They can't handle that.
And the club says this ban will never change. How does that make you feel?
Yeah, it's ironic this. I found out since that the actual statement there was released by the league secretary, a fellow by the name of Spencer Mitchell, who wasn't even around 3 years ago. He was involved in another club, so he hops around. But he used to be at Red Hill, and he was given a lifetime ban there. So it's quite interesting that he seems to be so ardent about trying to pursue something similar for somebody else who's clearly done a vast amount for the club. Not that he would know, because he's not been here very long at all.
And do you worry that, obviously, this whole banning thing, you were banned 3 years ago, you've been banned indefinitely now. Do you worry that this could happen to someone else in the future?
Very much so, yes. The simple fact is here that if somebody is banned by the club like myself, who is very high profile in terms of the club, you know, I'm not, well, maybe slightly more nationally now after the stories have gone out. But there are many, many supporters out there who have an absolute right to say what they want, as long as they're within the law. And in fairness, there's an awful lot of people out there on social media who say what they want, even if it's not within the law. My information and the what I try to do is to publicise the club and let everybody know what's happening, be it good or bad. And I have that right to do that. I also have the right to be critical of the club when they do things wrongly. And what's really upset me in recent years is the way that we used to be a friendly family club that would let people know what was going on. And the website was extremely detailed. I mean, again, I don't know whether I'm allowed to mention the name of the website. Yeah, it is www.eefconline.co.uk. It's a huge Epsom and Yule Football Club archive, and it covers the football club from day one. In fact, even before day one, we've got earlier predecessors in there. And my whole premise and my whole belief is that the football club desperately need a ground back in the borough. And if they can't get that, they need some help in terms of publicity. And although this publicity isn't great, what I'm hoping it will do is to get councillors in our borough to realise that desperately we need a ground, but we also need to have various checks and balances applied to the people in charge, because they really have let the club down in recent years in terms of the lack of information. And we don't get many supporters, and part of the reason is because we don't really try to attract them. Our social media is... it talks down to people. It's patronising. It's as if it wants to get a group of 12-year-olds along. Well, that's all well and good. Yeah, they're the future in due course. But the truth is, there's a lot of supporters out there who really, really do love Epsom and Yule and have an interest. They may not all live local now. They may have forgotten. They may be lapsed supporters. Many of these people, though, want to know what's going on at the club, that either that town they grew up in, or, I mean, I get people from around the world who take an interest in the football club. And unfortunately, the football club now currently just try to airbrush me. They basically do not want to acknowledge my existence, the website's existence, because they think it is bad, when actually it publicises the club.
Well, obviously you've been banned, but you've come up with a different way to watch these matches. Tell us about that.
Yes. What basically happened a few years ago when I was banned, I stood outside the ground looking in when we played at Leatherhead for a few months. So I didn't miss any games during that time. And in recent times, I was intended to do the same at Corinthian Casuals. Those who know the Corinthian Casuals ground will recognise where it's situated. And I would stand outside, just outside the ground, because they would ban me from that. The football club decided, however, that that wasn't vindictive enough. And next thing I know, there's a security guard hired by the club or by individuals at the club. At whatever expense that costs, I mean, you can probably only guess at that. But and he essentially said that I wasn't allowed within the boundary of the club, which is means that I couldn't stand behind the fence either, because that part was also owned by Corinthian Casuals, or leased by. I'm not sure of the arrangements there at the club. But suffice to say, when Epsom have a home game, we get those same sort of rights as a club. And so they were applying those against me. And so what I had to do then was retreat a little bit further back to the park behind, and I went 40 foot up a tree to watch my club play, because I do match reports, I provide match tweets and information at my ex site, EEFC Online, and those messages are detailed and informative, which the club just doesn't do. So lots of people out there still want to know what's going on at the club. And actually, the club are trying to deny them the information as well, which is very, very sad.
And what's it like viewing the game from that vantage point, 40 foot up off the ground?
Well, actually, it can be quite fun. I'm a 70s child. I grew up climbing trees, crashing bicycles, that sort of thing. And so, yes, I'm perfectly adept at getting up a tree, even though I'm a lot heavier than I used to be. But for me, it has pros and cons. I get a lovely aerial view of the game. And at the same time, it gives me a different vantage point. But that's a good point. But a bad point really is that I obviously don't get to stand behind the goal with my watching my team close up and standing and watching football with my boy. The club have taken that away from me, and also have taken that away from my boy by not allowing me in. And it's all really due to this personal vendetta, really, set up by the chairman and the vice chairman, and supported by a handful of gullible people who just who seem to have heard their side of the story and don't really care for mine. They've made no effort. That I referred to the league secretary, Spencer Mitchell. Bloke's made no effort whatsoever. The media officer made no effort whatsoever. And I used to publicise their photos a vast amount. Yet now they don't care for me.
And have you had any reaction from players or fans when they see you up in the tree, or does no one know that you're there?
Oh, quite a few know I'm there, especially now. After the story broke on Thursday, we had a home game on Friday. I had quite a few people come over. Quite a few people are very supportive of the situation. For better or for worse, I tend to look through all the social media comments. Some are the usual, oh yeah, he's a bit obsessive, it's a bit over the top. Well, yeah, but if you're a football supporter, you'll realise that you follow your team home and away if you're a proper supporter, and there are many, many thousands of people out there who will identify with that. It's a difficult situation though. I would like to get back into the football ground and support my club and continue to publicise my club. Our football club seem to want to go in a different direction. Well, that's up to them if they don't want me involved from an administrative point of view. But our football club are not judge and jury here. Our supporters are. And the supporters that we have, be it current or lapsed, want to know what's going on.
Do you think there's any chance of reconciliation with the committee?
Well, I don't know right now. I would like to think that they would finally begin to realise after all of this the stupidity of what their actions are, and what bad publicity it has bought the club. Or at least, I say the club committee, because it's those people who have made the decision. They are the ones at fault. They hide as a group, as a committee. They don't announce anything individually. Even match reports are not mentioned by name. It's all by the club. And it's all hidden and it's all kept under a carpet. While that culture remains, I don't see that changing. But I would like to think that common sense will at one day apply, and that people will actually convince the committee that, look, you guys, this is stupid. This is really, really pointless. And you're not stopping him watching anyway, because he's going to watch the games and he's going to report on the club, because it's his club as much as anyone else's and more than most.
And final question, if you can't return to the ground for now, will you keep supporting the team from a distance?
Well, that's a good question. I have followed the club for 44 years and I see no reason to change that. As for not being able to get to the ground, obviously I am able to get to the ground at this present time and I will continue to climb trees for as long as I can. There will come a time, I suppose, when maybe I'm too old to do that. I'm 58 now. I'm probably shouldn't be climbing trees now, if I'm honest. But at the same time, it's my club and I'm not going to have my life's work, a large part of my life's work, disrupted by the current caretakers of this club. People who've been there for, well, if you put the committee's service together as supporters, it comes to about the same length of time as me in total. You know, they've got a couple of people who've been there a little while and the others get parachuted in. There's very few of them have got a great deal of service at all. They brought some guy in last year who no one had ever heard of. This year, he's not on the committee list anymore. They're supposed to let members know this sort of thing, but they don't. And it's embarrassing. You know, what's the problem? Someone's left the committee? Just let them know. I could call them Britain's unfriendliest club. It certainly feels that way right now. And I know a large number of people agree with me. I am, yes, quite a full-on supporter. I'm a passionate supporter who follows my club home and away, and even across sea. We went to Jersey on a few occasions. I will do that because that's my team. I've raised a lot of money for the club, and I have also, as I say, been a committee member. I'm not someone who's been here 6 weeks. I'm not a glory-hunting fan who's been here for a few minutes and is not happy with the committee. I've put a vast amount of time into that club. And just because a handful of people right now don't like that is not a reason to give up. And it's really time that pressure was brought to bear on these people.
And one last question, actually. If there's anyone listening to this, you know, fans, supporters of the club or just the general public that want to get behind you and support you, is there anything that they can do?
Oh, that's a very good question. And it's something I haven't really thought about. I suppose realistically, the first thing would be to obviously follow me on X, EEFC Online, visit the website www.eefconline.co.uk, learn about our club, see exactly what's been done, because you're only hearing one side of the story. The club have declined to provide their side. I've explained why I believe that to be the case. But there's an awful lot of people out there, as I see from the social media comments, who like, ah, well, yeah, I'm not really interested in you. You know, you're nutter and all this sort of thing. Yeah, I've got me full anorak. Yes, I get that. But there are an awful lot of people out there who may want to help. And all I can do is suggest that you let the club know, write to the club, drop them lines, drop them messages, and they will. Hopefully see sense, write to the council. You know, the council would be a good one. If you're local, let the councillors know that some of these people are about to hopefully get a new ground in the borough. But at the same time, who knows what these people will do? If they can airbrush someone like me and not listen to me, then who knows what they'll do when they actually get a full lease? So checks and balances really need to be applied and the councillors need to be pressured in that area as well to do so.